Welcome to the Drop Time Report. Turn up the volume and listen to amazing stories about big bucks and the hunters who harvested them. Here is your host, outdoor writer, Tracy Breen.
Welcome to the Drop Time Report. On this week's episode, we're going to have on Clay O'Dell. Clay started out his career as an intern for Grant Woods at Growing Deer TV. It's kind of an interesting story. Went to one of Grant's field days, kind of hit it off with Grant, started working there as an intern in the summers. Worked his way up, eventually graduated from college, and came back to work for Grant full-time. And I'm often asked, how can I break into the outdoor industry? I've personally been in the industry for 20 years, and people are always asking me, how can I somehow make a living in the outdoor industry? And starting out as an intern is probably one of the greatest ways. And so Clay went from being an intern, helping Grant however he could, doing grunt work, eventually helping plant food plots and those kind of things, to working for Grant full time. And this past season was able to kill a buck called Slingshot that kind of has a unique history, is a really old deer. It's a pretty cool story. So Clay goes from intern to full-time employee, eventually gets, granted permission by Grant to go out there and try to kill a decent buck. And that's what today's podcast is about. Before we get Clay on the phone, I'd like to thank my sponsors, my title sponsor, Redneck Blinds, Fourth Arrow Camera Arms. Today, we're going to talk about Fourth Arrow Camera Arms because Clay actually self-filmed his hunt. Windscent, the makers of Vapor Deer Scent. Morel Targets, the High Roller Targets, a pretty cool one. One of my favorites, Huntworth Clothing. If you're on a budget, don't want to spend a lot of money, check out huntworthgear.com. Pine Ridge Archery, the makers of the Nitro Vein. Lucky Buck Mineral. Grim Reaper Broadheads, one of my favorite mechanical broadheads. Schaefer Performance Archery, makers of the XV Arrow Rest. Illinois Connection Outfitters. The Outdoorsman's, makers of great backpacks and tripod systems for glassing. And Wilderness Athlete. If you're trying to shed a few pounds, we're here in the Christmas season. The New Year's coming. Most people are going to want to start out the new year by shedding a few pounds. Go to wildernessathlete.com. They have a wide array of nutritional products. My favorite, Hydrate and Recover. Enter Drop 10 at checkout and get a discount. Now let's go ahead and get Clay on the phone. Welcome to the Drop Time Report, Clay. How are you today?
Hey, good, Tracy. Thanks for having me.
Hey, thanks for coming on and talking. And just to give people a little bit of background on you, you're kind of living the dream right now. You're working full time for Grant Woods, and obviously a lot of people in the deer hunting industry know that name. He's kind of a rock star among deer hunters and really knows land management and how to grow big bucks. Why don't we start out just by talking how you got that job? So many people ask me, hey, I would like to break into the hunting industry. How do I go about that? And really, you just did it.
Yeah, it's kind of been a whirlwind. I actually started with Grant. I actually met him back in summer of 2014. My dad and I came down and visited the property at the Proving Grounds. We actually lived just about 45 minutes north of there. And so we came down and toured the property and met Grant there and talked to him a little bit about doing an internship. And I was finishing up my senior year of high school, and he told me to get in touch with him once I had a little more free time and was interested in doing an internship. So I finished out last few semesters there of high school, and then right there towards the end, I had a little more free time and started working a few Saturdays and a few afternoons as I could through last month of high school. And then that kind of turned into part-time in the summer and then full-time in the summer and then part-time through school as I was finishing college there. And then did that for about 3 years and then just came on full-time last summer after I graduated from Missouri State. And so it's been kind of a whirlwind, but I've really enjoyed it. It's started off as a lot of hard work. It's not all day, looking at trail camera pictures. It's a lot of a lot of habitat management. And if you've ever been this part of the world in the middle of summer, you have a chance to find a few ticks. So It's a lot of hard work, but it's a lot of fun. I'm really, really enjoying it.
So, when you first started there, kind of talk about that habitat management. I know Grant is big into burning property and those kind of things. Was that a big part of your task, or what were you, what is your day-to-day job look like helping him manage the proving grounds?
Well, if you've ever been kind of this part of the world, those Ark Mountains are not hills. A lot of people just say, oh, those are just hills. But until you see it, it's really, really rough terrain, really rocky. You'd be amazed just how many rocks are down here. I mean, it's a big rock pile, and it takes a lot of attention to get it to where it's been today. And so, you know, just on a day-to-day basis, it really depends on the time of the year. You know, if it's dry enough, we're burning. And then if it's, you know, deer season, we're trying really, really hard to get on a buck, but also staying on top of doe harvest too. Does can get out of hand really easily, and we're pretty limited on flat ground here for food plots. So if the does get out of hand, you know, for several years, then they can wipe out the food plots pretty easily, and then that keeps a lot of the bucks from having quality food to feed on and keep them healthy all year. So everything from food plots to timber stand improvement, prescribed fire, it all plays, you know, hand in hand and, you know, managing properties, and especially one like this that, you know, every little bit counts right here, because it's pretty rough, and not every, you know, piece of this land is usable per se. And it's so steep, it's hard to hunt, and wind direction is not always what it's forecasted to be. So it's definitely a lot of work.
Now, when did you get to start climbing into the tree yourself and hunting the property?
Well, actually, I started hunting probably 2 or 3 years ago on some doe harvest during the rifle season. That's one of Grant's big things is, you know, you don't come in and shoot a buck right off the bat. You know, you earn it. You know, you put your time in the field, and then, you know, need to take some does before we have a chance at shooting some bucks. And, you know, that's what we did. I think everyone pretty well fills all their doe tags for rifle season, and then usually if they get a chance, they go out and shoot some does with the archery tackle as well. So it's just a lot of stuff that plays hand in hand. So
now this fall you got to hunt bucks then, right?
Yep, we did.
Tell that story. You know, you killed a buck that was named Slingshot. You know, week to week I'm doing these interviews, and it's amazing to me the different nicknames given to deer. Why was this one called Slingshot?
Well, the story with Slingshot started back in the summer of 2018. You know, we have a lot of bucks on the proving grounds that, you know, we've been watching for a lot of years, and, you know, a lot of them we've watched grow from 2 and 3 year olds up to, you know, some really nice upper age class bucks. And then, you know, sometimes, you know, we get lucky and we'll have a new buck show up. And that was kind of an instance with Slingshot. He showed up on a new food plot we created back on the southern end of the proving grounds, that there's not as many food plots back there. And it's kind of rough on that back end too. And so we just created a food plot and put up a couple cameras back there. And as soon as the food plot started greening up in the summer, Slingshot showed up. We didn't have the name Slingshot yet. We just saw this buck show up that had 2 splits on each G2 on both sides of the rack there. And we posted a video on our social media pages asking people what we should name this buck. And there was a lot of people that said we should call him Slingshot because his split G2s look like slingshots. And okay, the name stuck from there. And he was very, very visible all throughout the summer and through the fall and winter as well. And we had a lot of encounters with him. I think the first encounter that we ever had with him, Daniel, guy that does a lot of our production and videos and stuff here, he actually encountered him, I believe it was late October or early November there during our youth season. They were bow hunting, and Slingshot cruised right through a known travel corridor. And at that point, we kind of elected to, everyone had agreed to pass him because we weren't really sure on his age. He could have been three, he could have been four, and we kind of were wanting to see what he would turn into the next year. And he was kind of, he was staying, you know, pretty centrally located there on the property. So we knew if we would let him go, he'd have a pretty good chance at making it through. So we elected to pass, and Daniel got a pretty good show that morning. And then fast forward a few weeks later during the gun season, Tyler had a really good encounter with him on the same food plot that I would end up harvesting him on. It's a food plot we call Pops, and Slingshot came out and was feeding out the food plot for quite a while, and still Tyler honored the pass, and they let him walk out for another day, and he ended up showing back up early this season. As soon as the antlers started to develop, and we saw him right off the bat, and kind of thought, well, that's got to be Slingshot there. And he added a little bit of mass, and then he actually lost one of the splits on his G2 there. He still had one, and stayed on camera all summer long and was on, you know, pretty regular on all those cameras. And one evening, Grant and I went and hunted up that same food plot up at Pops. I was filming Grant, and right at last light, Slingshot stepped out of the back corner of this food plot, and it was just a little too dark. As soon as he stepped out, he was about 30 yards from us, and I couldn't exactly tell who it was, just to kind of give you an idea how dark it was, and knew it was a good buck. Okay. And just couldn't tell, and ended up being Slingshot, and Grant elected just to let him walk and wait for, you know, a better day where we had a little more light, just trying not to risk a shot on a buck like that when it was too dark. So he elected to pass, and then the following evening, they actually went back, Tyler and Grant went back there, and that's when Slingshot stepped out, and Grant took a shot at him, and it was so quiet out that as soon as Grant shot, Slingshot ducked and spun away from the sound of Grant's shot and ended up hitting him as he was really quartering away, and we weren't really sure where the shot hit. But I don't know if you want to dive into all that right now or if I'm...
Well, I mean, we could talk a little bit about it. So that deer obviously had a close call and lived to see another day. Obviously, you tracked him for a while, probably. Not yep. sure what happened. How long did he disappear for after that shot?
So Grant shot him, and we tracked him. I think we ended up pulling up to 36 man hours tracking that deer. We followed blood and ended up just losing it, and went back the next morning and couldn't find any more blood. So we backed out and stayed out of the area and just kept watching the cameras. And about a month later, we ended up seeing him first time on camera. And he looked fine, and you couldn't even hardly tell, you know, there was no spot on that side, no scar. You couldn't see anything. He wasn't limping. And so we were all super, super excited. And I believe actually that evening, Grant Tyler went back up there to that food plot, and sure enough, Slingshot stepped out, but he was just on the other end of the food plot there. And
So he disappeared, though. Just to reiterate there, he disappeared for a full month.
Yep. He showed up, I think he was shot on September 22nd, and then October 22nd, exactly a month later, he showed back up.
Wow. So it obviously threw him for a loop enough to just become a ghost.
Yeah, he disappeared, and I'm sure was laying low for a while, but once he did show back up, he looked fine. If that deer would have shown up anywhere else, we would have never even known, you know, that he had been hit.
Okay. So, what day did you kill the deer?
Shot him on November 25th.
Okay. And so, from those close encounters, how many more encounters between you know, when he showed up a month later, I mean, was it just every time someone hunted that food plot, they would see that deer?
No, actually, that was the October 22nd, and the first time he showed up after being shot was the only time anyone saw him on the hoof this season after he had been shot.
Okay.
So he was definitely very visible on the cameras. We just didn't end up running into him. We saw several other good bucks, and we're hunting in that area quite a bit, but it was kind of in that time frame where he was, you know, it was peak rut and bucks were on the move. We saw this in a lot of different deer, not just slingshot, but they ended up, you know, making pretty good trips out of their home range up deeper into the property and places they hadn't usually been. And, you know, they were on does and were kind of all over the place. But we knew at some point, you know, slingshot and a lot of those other bucks would end up coming back to those, you know, some of their core areas, you know, trying to replenish some energy and kind of replenish themselves after the rut there.
So he was anybody's deer. It's not like you were the only one hunting him. Everybody was kind of hunting him. I mean, was he kind of one of the top hit list bucks for the property?
He was. We knew going into this season that he got totaled up, you know, 10 plus bucks that we wanted to, you know, if they came out and gave us a good shot, we would definitely take him. Slingshot was definitely one of the top ones just because we knew he was very visible, and we knew if we played, you know, our cards right and knew we hunted smart that we would probably, one of us would have an encounter with Slingshot. And that's what we did. We, you know, just hunted safe, and Green actually ended up tagging a buck with his rifle the third evening of Missouri's rifle season, and Daniel tagged one that night as well. So both Daniel and Grant were both tagged out pretty soon here in Missouri's rifle season, and that left Tyler and I. So we were on doe patrol trying to take out a few does, and you know, Grant's good enough, is very gracious enough to, you know, if a good buck comes out, you know, we're in the business of making content, and everyone has a green light. You know, if it's a, you know, sure enough shooter buck and it makes good footage, then we need to take the shot. And so I was fortunate enough to be out there in the food plot that morning looking to fill my last doe tag, and Slingshot happened to step out. So.
Okay. You drop him in his tracks?
It was pretty close. He came out and shot him, and he ended up running across just that barely off the edge of the food plot there. He didn't quite make it out. And he was sliding out of the food plot right there, kind of at the last bit there.
What's interesting to me to kind of break down his habits, I wonder if you ever would have laid eyes on him if a food plot wouldn't have been put in where it was. I mean, do you guys think, or have you analyzed, did he live in the area, you know, much of his life, but it wasn't until that food plot was put in that, you know, he showed up, or did that food plot pull him in from an adjoining property? I mean, what does anyone kind of thought or talk that through?
We haven't for sure, but I would be very, very surprised if that food plot in there did not change some deer, some habits for deer in that area. Before, you know, there were several smaller hidey hole food plots, but really, you know, nothing in there substantial enough to really hold deer and to pull deer, you know, from adjoining properties. And, you know, I think we see this a lot with does and even with a lot of bucks too. You know, adding a large food source and having quality habitat, you know, whereas, you know, maybe before you put all that in, you may have, you know, one or two deer that may just cruise through. And then if you put that in there, you know, as soon as they find that, they want to stay over there. You know, if there's, you know, maybe not as much hunting pressure, or, you know, fewer predators, better food, better cover, you know, that pulls in a lot of deer. And that's what we try to do. You know, if you manage it properly, you'd be amazed what will change on your property and what kind of deer you can pull in. And you know, Slingshot was a deer that, you know, none of our neighbors really have, you know, just great food sources. And, you know, it's not Iowa here. You know, there's not, you know, an annual crop of soybeans going in all around us. We're kind of an island here for, you know, quality food year round. And, you know, before that, he probably made a living, you know, off acorns and some native plants, but nothing really enough to, you know, carry a deer, you know, really healthily all through the year. And so by adding that food plot, you know, that pulled him in and ended up giving us a lot of opportunities.
What's interesting too, you never saw him. So then the first year you saw him, you told me, you know, you guys were thinking he was probably 3.5, 4.5 years old. The surprise has been after the shot, and you take him to the taxidermist, and he believes he's much older.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, when Slingshot first showed up, he was in an area of the property that didn't have, you know, the best nutrition before we started putting in food plots back there. And Slingshot was kind of one of those bucks that he had a lot of mass, which typically your upper age class bucks have better mass than, you know, say a 2 or 3 year old. And so we knew he could be a really good 3 year old. He could be a 4 year old, or, you know, there's a possibility he could be, you know, an older deer. But, you know, not knowing, you know, being the first year we'd seen him, we wanted to give him another year and see what he might turn into. So, you know, last year we opted to give him a pass. And so this year he hadn't really changed a whole lot, but we knew he was a mature deer for sure. So we were going to take him if we had the opportunity. So I was fortunate enough to harvest him, and we took him to the taxidermist the evening of the shot and started caping him out. And first thing we were really interested in looking at was where granite hit him earlier on during bow season. And we caped him out, and then you could kind of see a little bit of scarring on the hide there, but really the only sign of it was there was kind of an empty cavity there just in front of his shoulder at the base of the neck where Grant's arrow had gone in. But, you know, no major scar tissue, nothing that would really make you think, man, that buck, you know, was really hurt pretty bad, but really nothing there. So I actually haven't got a chance to look at his jawbone yet. Got a call from the taxidermist yesterday afternoon, and he said, he asked, you know, how old do you guys think this deer was? And we thought, well, we thought he could be 4 or 5. You know, there's a possibility he could be older. We just weren't really sure. We didn't have, you know, the history with him to really say, man, yeah, that's an older deer. We've watched him for several years. But he told me, he said that's some of the oldest looking teeth that he's seen on a deer this year. Normally when a deer gets older, and it varies on certain deer, you know, depends on what they're eating here. It seems like, you know, they probably eat a few rocks every now and then, or get some gravel as they're eating, and maybe their teeth wear down just a little bit more than around other parts of the country. But a lot of bucks here just are really worn down. But apparently the teeth on Slingshot are very worn down. I'm really excited to see it. I'm hoping to get over there this evening and take a better look at them. So
now he thinks he might be as old as 8 years old.
He said, just by looking at him, he said he would guess it to be 8 years old. But, you know, it varies greatly on, you know, the deer and how they chew and, you know, how that wear affects their teeth. You know, we've seen some deer that are for sure 6 years old, and, you know, we've had that kind of history with them. And, you know, just by looking at the jawbone there, you might say they're 4, maybe 5, maybe they could even possibly be 3. But the best way to know that is to take the incisors off the jawbone and send them in, and they can actually test them for sure. And that'll give you a much more accurate date. But you can pretty accurately age them just by looking at the lower jawbone. Sure. And the wear.
Now, another side note to this story, you filmed this hunt yourself, correct?
Yes, I did.
And Fourth Arrow Camera Arms is one of the sponsors of this podcast. And so I just wanted to talk a little bit about, you know, filming the hunt by yourself and maybe some of the tricks that you've learned to, you know, film yourself. Obviously, you guys aired this episode, so it turned out well. I mean, what did you do to ensure you had some good quality footage?
Well, self-filming is definitely something that I've been wanting to do for quite a while. This year was the first year I'd really had the opportunity to do it, given everyone else had tagged out pretty early. And so I was using the Fourth Arrow Rex arm. It's just kind of, yep. It's a little bit shorter of an arm, and it attaches right to the top of the tripod. And I actually first started self-filming, I guess it'd be a week before I had the slingshot hunt. It was the first hunt I'd actually self-filmed and actually harvested a deer. So I harvested a couple does before, and that gave me some practice. Really, you can't really get used to it unless you do it. And, you know, having those few hunts with the does really helped me a lot on the self-filming. And then also having a blind that, you know, conceals a lot of movement, because there's no hiding it. If you're going back and forth from the camera to the gun and, you know, there's quite a bit of movement going on, and having a blind that you can stay concealed in. I was hunting out of a redneck blind that was on a trailer, and that allowed me to, you know, to have the gun and the camera right there close, where I could, you know, easily get on and off the deer from the gun to the camera. Another thing that really, really helped is I was using a bog field pod, and that just lets you set the gun up on a rest that you can shoot off of. And it swivels, you can move everything on there super easily, and that lets you have the gun ready in position. So, you know, if I stop and if you watched the episode, I tried to stop slingshot several times before finally getting a shot off, and you know, there's always a little bit of hesitation. Every time I would stop them, I would get the camera on them, and then I'd go to the rifle as fast as I could. And you know, you're looking through the scope, and I'm thinking, man, I don't think he took another step or two, but I'm going to make sure just to make sure the footage is just right. So it was kind of hard making sure, you know, he was still in frame, but,
How many times did you go back and forth?
Oh, it was at least three or four times. He came out kind of on the left side of me, on the edge of the plot. And as soon as I saw him step out, I figured he's going to work across the food plot. And so I'll just kind of wait and be patient and let him work out. I'll get plenty of footage of him. And, cause my best shot was straight out in front of me. And so I was filming him there, and he kind of was acting funny. He was going in and out of the food plot, and I thought maybe, you know, the way it looked, he had his nose to the ground, and it kind of looked like he was trying to get on a trail. And I thought, hopefully he does not get on a trail of a hot doe. And so I was filming him there, and I ended up grunting at him as he stepped back off into the timber. And so I grunted at him with the messenger grunt call, and he turned back around and came back out into the food plot. And as soon as he stepped back out, I pulled the gun over and got it out the other window and was going to try and take a shot at him there. And he kept walking straight up across the field. So I moved back over to the other window. And then I was trying to get the camera on him, and I was able to swing over with the Fourth Arrow arm and get out of the same window. And it's hard to tell in the footage, but it was so bright coming in the blind, the sunlight coming in the blind, that it kind of blew out the scope there for a second, because I was kind of looking. And so I end up having to go back to the other window. And I think I was finally able to get a shot off on that side was the best shot. But yeah, it was kind of a circus in there for a while.
It definitely adds difficulty, you know. I mean, it's hard enough trying to kill an animal, right? And then you're trying to film, and let's face it, you're not trying to just film. You're trying to create footage that other people will watch. And there's definitely a difference, you know. If I'm filming myself just for my buddies to watch, no big deal. But you're filming, you know, as a business, basically. I mean, you guys want to have high quality footage, so that's a whole never, you know, level of difficulty.
Yeah, it's, you know, and it takes a little bit longer, and, you know, it, you know, very easily I could have, you know, taken that first shot as soon as he stepped out. I could have shot him right there. But you know, it's honestly kind of nice, because you get a chance to kind of catch your breath and, you know, stay composed. Although, you know, it's in that situation, it's hard to stay, you know, super calm. There's always, you know, that adrenaline rush is just is just something else. But, you know, it gives you a second to say, okay, stay calm, take a breath, and, you know, get some good footage of them. And you kind of get to enjoy the moment, you know. If that deer probably would have stepped out at first and, you know, we hadn't have been filming, you know, we could have shot him right off the bat before he, you know, took another step. But, you know, that let the hunt play out a little bit. You know, you get to enjoy it, and you know, just kind of take it in as the situation progresses. And so I was able to, you know, watch him, and you know, I think that helps a lot. You know, the more encounters and the more time as a hunter you can spend, you know, with deer in front of you, and you know, read their body language helps a lot. And it's a really good learning experience, because, you know, watching the body language of the deer kind of lets you understand what's going to happen next. So that's one really cool thing about filming, one, being able to go back and look at it, but also, you know, it kind of almost slows things down a little bit for you, because you got to make sure and take time and, you know, make sure it's good quality.
It gives you something to worry about other than buck fever, right? I mean, there's a lot of people I've interviewed from TV shows over the years, and they all say, you know, I would have been shaking like a leaf, but because I was worried about the cameraman or because I was worried about getting the footage myself, I forgot all about buck fever.
Yeah. It had been several years since I had harvested a buck. So, I was shocked to see a good buck, and then really shocked to see Slingshot standing there. So, it definitely kind of helps take your mind off of it, but it was still a pretty exciting experience.
Was this your biggest buck to date then?
Yes, it was, for sure.
That's awesome. So you're getting a shoulder mount done then?
I am. I'm hoping it's done really fast too.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, congratulations. And thank you for doing the interview today. It was a great story.
Absolutely, Tracy. I appreciate taking the time and you know, happy to share it.
Cool. Well, have a great day and Merry Christmas.
Thanks, Tracy. You too.
Yep. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
It was great having Clay on the show. On next week's show, we're going to have on Mick Bowman. Mick is a guy that lives in Kansas. He spent much of his career stringing fence for ranchers, operating heavy equipment, but he also has a knack for killing big bucks, and one of his favorite way to kill big bucks is over a decoy. So in this interview, we are going to discuss the tricks of the trade, how he goes about killing monster bucks over a deer decoy, and there's really a lot of things you have to think about and details you have to go over when setting up a decoy to make sure everything plays out as planned. And just like most hunting experiences, sometimes the plan doesn't come together. So we're going to discuss all that in the next episode of the Drop Time Report. Between now and then, if you could visit my website at tracybreen.com, that's where I book wild game dinners, or give me a review on iTunes or Google Play or wherever it is you listen to the podcast. I'd also appreciate it if you go ahead and subscribe to the podcast. Until next time, have a great day.